Shalom Aleichem. Welcome to the Schmooze, the Yiddish Book Center's podcast. I'm Lisa Newman, and today I'm visiting with Alex Weiser. Alex was born and raised in New York City and creates acutely cosmopolitan music, combining a deeply felt historical perspective with a vibrant, forward-looking creativity. He's active as an opera composer of works including Tevye's Daughters, written by librettist Stephanie Fleischman, a commission from the American Lyric Theater, and The Great Dictionary of the Yiddish Language with librettist Ben Kaplan, which is set in the 1950s post-war New York and follows linguist Yodul Mark as he sets out to write the world's first fully comprehensive Yiddish dictionary. Weiser's debut album, And All the Days Were Purple, was named a 2020 Pulitzer Prize finalist for music. Welcome, Alex, and eager to talk about your latest work, In a Dark Blue Night.
Thanks so much for having me back, Lisa.
Always a pleasure and always great to hear what you're up to. So if I may borrow from your words, let's share with our listeners a little bit about In a Dark Blue Night and then jump into a conversation. You write it consists of two connected song cycles. The first, In a Dark Blue Night, sets to music modernist Yiddish poetry about New York City at night, all written by Jewish immigrant poets at the turn of the 20th century. And the second, Coney Island Days, transforms an oral history with your late grandmother, Irene Weiser, into a musical exploration of the period of time when Jews became Americans and the way that humble individual stories can capture the sweeping breadth of history. So share a bit about how this all came to be.
So after I wrote my debut album, And All the Days Were Purple, which explored Yiddish poetry, that was like my first exploration of Yiddish poetry. It was a really meaningful project for me. After working with Yiddish poetry, I was curious to explore my own connection to Yiddish poetry, my own connection to Yiddish, because, you know, as I learned Yiddish and I discovered these texts, they were just amazing texts from the past with an incredible kind of Jewish pedigree. And, you know, I felt connected to them, but I wanted to probe, you know, what is that connection? Because I didn't grow up speaking Yiddish. And, you know, in my family, like in many American Jewish families, we had little words or phrases in Yiddish. And I knew it was the language of my family, but we didn't speak Yiddish. So I kind of wanted to explore what is my own connection to this culture. After doing some thinking, I thought, you know, it's really through the kind of missing link between the Eastern European kind of Yiddish land and my New York Jewish upbringing is this kind of Yiddish New York moment of immigrant Jewish culture. So that's what kind of first spurred me to want to explore that kind of shifting point where Yiddish left over to English for American Jews and where Eastern European Jews became Americans.
And maybe describe a little bit how the two cycles bridge together, because I think it's really interesting complement of work.
Yeah, so the first cycle starts right before this kind of transition moment and it's all in Yiddish. And so it's all five poems by wonderful Yiddish poets, Morris Rosenfeld, Anna Margolin, Naftali Gross, Celia Dropkin, and Ruben Iceland. And they're all writing about New York as immigrants who've just arrived. They're writing in Yiddish, obviously, and reflecting on the city as they experience it. And then I move from night to day, and I set to music the words of my own grandmother, reflecting on her childhood. And so she is of just the next generation. You know, those poets had the kind of experience maybe that her parents had. And she grew up speaking English, but with parents that really didn't know English very well, you know, speaking a little bit of Yiddish, understanding Yiddish. But so she's on the other side of that kind of Yiddish-English divide. And she, you know, has these wonderful stories about growing up with a family, had a Knish store in Coney Island and, you know, stayed behind it and had all sorts of misadventures.
And I'm going to get to it a little bit later. I'm fascinated by the way you evoke the words through the music. So one thing that struck me is how this is both, you know, sort of a shared story history for many of us and a personal one for you. And how did you stay on the remove, as it were, but also do what you needed to do to express your relationship to all of this?
I mean, I think that's what's so interesting about these stories is that they really can be kind of stand-ins for this epochal, you know, larger history. And it's been amazing to share, you know, these songs, even with the words of my grandmother You're right. It's totally personal. And I hear my grandmother and I miss her. And we were so close and I love her so much. And I hear her and I can just picture her. But it's been very gratifying to share these songs with many other people, including in other countries, who didn't have, these songs have been performed in Canada, they've been performed in Australia and elsewhere. And to audiences for whom I know that their grandmother didn't have this experience. And yet I think it really does connect. People have told me this reminds me of my grandmother, someone who didn't grow up in Coney Island, or anything like that. And I think that's what's so special about these stories. In their specificity, they really kind of captured the breadth of history.
They're so evocative too. I mean, as somebody who grew up with grandparents in New York City and very close by, yeah, there's something that resonates. Another question I have, sort of on a larger scale is how do you think of this body of work as sort of, as we say about Yiddish, like new Yiddish music? And part of what I also always say is a continuum of music that draws from and evolves.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question that I've gotten about my work a number of times, and sometimes it's phrased as, why doesn't this sound more Jewish? Because my music doesn't sound kind of stereotypically Jewish, and in the use of certain modes that we kind of associate with klezmer music or with cantoral music, and certain intervals like the augmented second always sounds really Jewish to us. My answer to that is always that I'm telling stories and I'm using music to kind of bring those stories to life. And I think that actually, in the poets that I set to music here, you see a really similar kind of relationship to kind of Jewish intellectual culture in their words. And that's what I'm really picking up on in my music. There are wonderful Yiddish poems and Yiddish stories that are very folksy, that really draw on folk motifs and the kind of, these kind of things we think of when we think Jewish culture. But these poets are actually not doing that. They're writing incredible modernist poetry that is, reflects this kind of cosmopolitan worldview, this international worldview, this really human worldview, but they're doing it in Yiddish, and like from the lens of being, Jewish immigrants. And so that's really what I'm interested in my music, like telling these stories, really immersing in this history and in this literature, but in this kind of more human way, not just with kind of folk motifs.
And you do that so brilliantly. I wanted to ask you about the curation because each of the poems is fabulous. Paired with your grand, the excerpts from your grandmother's oral history, it just they work so well in concert. But I think for people, and thank you for putting the notes in English for those myself who don't read in the Yiddish. They are so modernist, as you say. They are cosmopolitan. They each have a little bit of a different tenor to them, or what have you. How hard was it to find those? And did they come first? Did the music, with your grandmother come after? How did that all fall together?
Yeah, so the first song cycle here I wrote was In a Dark Blue Night, the settings of the five Yiddish poems. And in order to find those poems, I did a lot of research and a lot of reading, and I made my own kind of collection of Yiddish poems about New York, much broader than these five that I ultimately settled on. And when I was doing that, I found this book by Nachman Meisel of a wonderful anthology of Yiddish writing about America. I think it's America in Yiddish and Wort or something like that. And it's like this like 800 or 900 page tome. It's really fantastic. And actually most of what I found was in there. And there's a lot more like it where that came from. And so I kind of collected the things that were specifically about New York and I made my own collection. And what I found, I did translations myself also to just really get to know each poem, really think about the word choice in them in the Yiddish. And what I found was I was most kind of drawn to these poems about n the nighttime, about this kind of quiet side of New York. I found that really connected to my own experience as a native New Yorker, even more so than some of the other wonderful poems that were more about the kind of cliched, side of New York, the hustle, the bustle, the busyness of it. I found this kind of like the quiet, majestic, glowing city at night. There was something about it that just felt So true, and so, something that like a New Yorker really would know. That maybe someone who wasn't from New York wouldn't know. And so it was just really poignant for me to see this in Yiddish, in this other language that we have this kind of discontinuity from. But yet, here they're describing things that I could see when I look out my window. It was a very moving thing to read.
The sense of place is pretty profound. The other thing that I really enjoyed while reading the translation, listening, you had also these wonderful colorized postcards, and they weren't just I hope you'll understand this. None of it was nostalgia. It really just put you in that time frame. And there was something about, as you say, about night and the light in the street lights, and you could. It just really enveloped me in this amazing sort of sensual way. Both, it gave me a visual with through the music and an auditory experience and all. And again, how much of, yeah, how hard is it to get there for you to interpret a poem through music?
It's like a amazing experience for me in terms of getting to know the poetry to set it to music. You know what I mean? Like I always start with a really close reading of the poems, really kind of like meditating on what are the ideas here, what is the imagery. And I usually in my pieces, my settings, I usually settle on one of the images to really draw out to make it the kind of core of each of the songs. How am I going to bring it to life in music? What's the musical analog to kind of the imagery that's motivating the poem? So like in the opening song, for example, it's this beautiful kind of almost, well, I kind of settled it on as a lullaby. The setting sun is kind of wishing the Hudson River a good night. And it's just this gorgeous poem by Morris Rosenfeld. And so, contemplating it, I kind of said, okay, this is going to be a lullaby. It's going to, it's wishing a good night. So it's going to be a lullaby. And then that kind of lilting lullaby kind of, motif becomes the thing that the whole song is built on. And each poetry, each setting, of a poem for me works in that kind of way.
Let's, if I may, I'm going to ask you if we can play one piece, which really illustrates what you just spoke about, and then come back because I have a few more questions for you. But I think, would you, can we do the Celia Dropkin?
Sure. Yeah. So the Celia Dropkin is the fourth song of the first song cycle, and in the song she describes in the poem she describes the New York City skyline with this wonderful metaphor of describing it as a kind of honeycomb with each of the lit up rooms inside all of the buildings is a kind of chamber of the honeycomb with glowing honey, but instead of honey, it's light that is glowing out of these buildings, and so it's this kind of wonderfully evocative image of the city, which is both kind of organic and imagines it as this kind of like amazing, natural space, but also that's created by people.
Great. So we'll play just a short bit from that and then come back.
In die Kammern von
Great. Well, that was lovely, and it really illustrates your point, I think, beautifully. So I wanted to move on to the second cycle, your grandmother, and speak a little bit about your thoughts about that in terms of what they recall.
My grandmother was sick, and I knew she was going to be passing away. This was a few years ago. And we were very close, and I just one of the many things that she shared with me that was really moving to me were these stories of her childhood. And she really was a connection for me to, to this world of Yiddish like that. That's what I guess everyone has this. They have the grandparents that spoke Yiddish or that spoke some Yiddish or whatever, and that's their kind of connection to the past. And she lived it. Her family had a Knish store in Coney Island. Every summer they would live there behind the store, and she had all sorts of adventures in Coney Island. Playing at the beach with her sister B, who she was very close with. She was the youngest of three, and her she would talk about her oldest brother, Morty. She thought he was just angelic and amazing, but he also was, a little bit older, so he wasn't so focused on what the little girls were doing. So they kind of had free range to run around and do whatever they wanted. And she had an amazing childhood. And she would go to the Russian bath with her mother, and she was very close with her mother and with her aunt. She also talks about how her aunt didn't like Coney Island, which I just love as a detail in these stories that, we kind of look back on these times and it's like, oh, it's all great, but actually some people didn't like it and that wasn't for everyone. And so her grandmother was more of a fan of, visiting the mountains, and she would go there with her grandmother, with her aunt. She'd go there with her aunt sometimes. So yeah, it's just like I wanted to, memorialize this and kind of like save her stories in a way. And so it was a special project for me. I think, she might even be a little bit embarrassed if she heard it. But she's not here to hear it, and I'm grateful, for me, it's really for me. I see it as opposed to for her, and I think that she'd be happy that I'm happy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's an amazing gift for you and your family, I would imagine. And you definitely, that piece about the Knish store just is wonderful. I feel like I'm standing in there. So hats off again for creating that sense of place through music. It's something I can't imagine how you can do it. Alex, for our listeners, the album is In a Dark Blue Night. The release date is March 28th.
29th.
Oh, 29th. Okay.
Yeah, we're doing a kind of pre-release party slash concert at YIVO on March 28th, and we'll have albums there for signing and for purchase. So, but the actual album will be available everywhere, Spotify and YouTube and all the places on March 29th.
Okay. And the event at YIVO is open to the public?
Yep, it's open to the public, free. I would love to see you all there, so please join us.
Great. And to learn more, Alex Weiser, Alex WEISER.com. Great work. Look forward to being there for the release launch at YIVO. Always good to hear from you. Keep working. And thanks again for taking time to join me today.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Take care.
You have been listening to The Schmooze, a production of the Yiddish Book Center in Amherst, Massachusetts. To learn more about this podcast and to subscribe, visit yiddishbookcenter.org. I'm Elizabeth Carteropoli. Until next time, be well and be healthy.